You have entered the strange and mysterious world of Terror at Collinwood, and today I'm going to be discussing the Dan Marilyn Ross Paperback Library Dark Shadows novels with my esteemed guests, Amy Roeder, Jeff Thompson, and Joe Escobar, and I am very much looking forward to that. But before we get to the show, I want to let you know about a couple of things that are going on. So in the video version of this episode, you'll notice that behind Amy, there's a Sasquatch image of some artwork of a Bigfoot, and that's representative of the film Sasqua, which is a lost Bigfoot film that was made in Massachusetts in the 1970s, premiered in 1975, and the film is elusive as the subject itself, I suppose. So, but a documentary has been made about this lost Bigfoot film. Amy's husband is involved in the documentary, and there's going to be a big screening for this documentary at the Luna Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. It's probably going to be this fall that it will be premiering there, and it's going to be in film festivals, etc. So keep an eye out. I did put a link in the show notes to the Luna Theater page, so you can check that out. It's going to be a good time. And speaking of the Luna Theater, I will be there in October to present The Raven, the film made by the late, great Roger Corman, starring Vincent Price, Boris Karloff, Peter Lorre. It's going to be a great event as part of the Poe in Lowell event. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and I'll give more information as we get closer. And in some very sad news, Heidi Harris, the niece of Gay Edmund, has posted that her aunt passed away, and this has been shared by the Dark Shadows news page. It was on the Dark Shadows forums, different Facebook groups. Gay Edmund was a cast member on Dark Shadows in 1840. She played the ghost of Harriet Collins, and in 1841 parallel time, she played Stella Young. I actually reached out to Heidi a little while back because Stuart Manning told me she was on Twitter, and she's actually like a radio host. And so I reached out to her to see if I could get Gay onto the podcast. This was a while back. Unfortunately, that never happened. But I was really sad to hear about her passing. My condolences to Heidi and to Gay's family and friends, and to the Dark Shadows fan community. We've lost another cast member, and that's really sad. That glisten. There are spoilers here for those who listen. Welcome to Terror at Collinwood. Tis I, Penny Dreadful, taking on the unfortunate form of Danielle. And I am joined today by three illustrious Dark Shadows fans who are going to be discussing the Dan Ross Paperback Library Dark Shadows novels, a much requested topic for this podcast. So without further ado, a first-timer here at Terror at Collinwood is Amy Roeder, who works as a writer and editor at Harvard, but also has a spooky sideline. She developed Lowell, Massachusetts' first haunted walking tour with her husband, and I'll put a link to the Haunted Lowell YouTube channel in the show notes so that you can check it out. Next up is Joe Escobar, who you heard back in episode 25 of the podcast, where we discussed the 1897 storyline. Joe is an English teacher and writer. He created and edited the online fanzine The Collins Mausoleum and attended almost every Dark Shadows event between 1983 and 1991. And last but not least, you heard him back in episode 4 of the podcast. It's writer and college English professor Dr. Jeff Thompson, who was nominated for a Rondo Award for his book, The Television Horrors of Dan Curtis, wrote the introductions for all of the Hermes Press Dark Shadows comics collections, and wrote his master's thesis on the historical novels of Dan Ross. So welcome to the show, all three of you. It's great to have you all here.
Thank you so much.
Great to meet
you. So much fun. As I mentioned, the Ross novels. That is a topic that a lot of fans request for the podcast, and I thought, it's about time we get around to talking about these because for many people, this was their introduction to Dark Shadows, and they were translated into a variety of languages, and we'll get to that too, because Joe has been sending me some interesting covers for international versions of these books. I want to first talk about how. Oh, actually, I want to ask Jeff first. Did you, Jeff, I know you wrote your master's thesis on Dan Ross's historical novels. Did you actually know him? Did you get to meet him?
Yes, Marilyn and Dan Ross were guests at the Dark Shadows Festival in 1984 and 85, the second and third Dark Shadows Festivals. And at that point, I began corresponding with Dan and Marilyn, who lived up in St. John, New Brunswick, Canada. And we did a little presentation at the 85 Dark Shadows Festival of reading excerpts from some of his stories, novels, and plays. I have read 120 of Dan Ross's 358 novels. Can you imagine that? I've read just one third of them, and I've read 120. And I would discuss the books with Dan in my letters to him. And so when it came time for me to write my master's thesis at Tennessee State University, where I was teaching, I wanted to write about Dan Ross's historical novels, his historical romance novels that blend real life people and places with his fictitious characters. So in those books, the characters interact with Edgar Allan Poe, Charles Dickens, Beau Brummel, Napoleon, William Desmond Taylor. Just about anyone you can think of from recent and distant history. So of course I mentioned the Dark Shadows novels and all of Dan's many books: gothic, mystery, historical, western, romance, horror, spy, nurse novels, which was a genre in the 60s. But I focus on four of Dan Ross's best historical romance novels, including one, The Raven and the Phantom, that involves Edgar Allan Poe as a character, and his short story, The Oval Portrait, is part of the resolution of the novel. So I was thrilled to be able to meet Marilyn and Dan after having started reading his books in about 1968 or 9 with the Dark Shadows novels. And then because I liked Marilyn Ross and his books so much, I then started to seek out the gothic novels and mystery and historical novels and romance novels. And so I knew Dan up until his death in 1995, and then continued to correspond with Marilyn and occasionally talk with her on the phone.
A lot of fans still to this day. In fact, I recently had filmmaker Sam Irvin on the podcast, and he was a little confused because I kept referring to Dan Ross. He said, "Well, it's Marilyn Ross, not Dan." I said, "Well, actually, that was his pen name that he used. It was his wife's name. He used many pen names in his career, depending on the genre he was writing in. So for the Dark Shadows novels, there were 32 Dark Shadows novels set in the paperback library universe, Dark Shadows universe, which is very distinct from the TV show between 1966 and 1972, and also the novelization of House of Dark Shadows, which Dan Ross also wrote. So in all, there are 33 Dark Shadows novels, but House of Dark Shadows is distinct. Now, I want to go around and just ask how each of you discovered the Ross novels sort of in relation to the TV show. And we'll start with Amy, because Amy hasn't been on the podcast before. So I'd like to hear about your history with Dark Shadows and the Ross novels as well.
I started watching Dark Shadows when it was on the Sci-Fi Channel in the 90s, and I hadn't picked up any of the books until I was in a store in Portland called Strange Main. I mean, what
Oh,
better
yes.
place to buy a Dark Shadows novel? So I got Barnabas Collins and the Mysterious Ghost, And it has Quentin on the cover. So I was expecting Barnabas Quentin in 1897. So it was kind of a surprise when I found out that it takes place at Collinwood in the 60s and it's about a ballet. So that kind of threw me a little bit. And I didn't pick up the books for a little while after that, but then I started a pandemic rewatch of the series and I got very into all of the side products. And I found out that Kathryn Lee Scott did the audiobooks for all of them. As a big audio fan, I was all over that. And she does a great job of reading these. She does all the voices. So I just got hooked on them. And I've since picked up a number of them, reading them in paperback. My favorite is I have a copy of Barnabas Collins, and it says at the bottom, the first novel about the vampire America loves to hate, and the
Yeah.
previous reader crossed it out and put love.
Ah, I love that. I love that. That's great. Oh my goodness. Joe, how about you? How did you first discover the Ross novels?
Well, in 1976, Channel 56 out of Boston started rerunning the show, and I picked up the novels. Well, a friend of mine picked up the novels from his mother, and we were reading them, and we kind of watched the show along with it, but it was on late at night, so I could only watch on Fridays once in a while. So my main introduction to the series was through the books.
Oh.
I thought Quentin was going to be popping up any time. I mean, I kept waiting for Quentin to show up on the TV show, and of course he never did in that run of syndication. But we were reading those, and of course the Gold Key comics also in the mid-70s. And the first two books that I came across were, well, my friend Jim was reading Barnabas Quentin and the Body Snatchers. So I was given The Mystery of Collinwood to read. And that one was, it piqued my interest, got me interested in the pre-Barnabas characters, but I wondered why Barnabas wasn't there. Because I always thought it was the Barnabas show, but I kind of figured that there had to have been a pre-Barnabas period, because why would they do four books? At the time, I didn't know about the fifth one. Why would they do the four books that didn't have Barnabas if he was on right from the beginning?
All right. And Jeff, how about you? How did you first discover the Ross novels?
I guess I saw the books in, a department store or bookstore, and started reading them voraciously. And I too love novel number six, Barnabas Collins, just really liked Dan Ross's writing style. At the time, I too thought that Marilyn Ross was a female author. So I was reading the books in the late 60s and all through the 70s, and rereading them and reading the Dark Shadows comic books, and just enjoyed them thoroughly. And as I said, that's what led me to branch off into Marilyn Ross, other Marilyn Ross Gothic novels. And somehow I figured out that Clarissa Ross was also Marilyn Ross, I think, by looking carefully at the copyright page, because most of his books are copyrighted W.E.D. Ross, William Edward Daniel Ross, not the Dark Shadows novels, which are copyrighted by Dan Curtis Productions and owned by now Dan Curtis Holdings. But Dan Ross owned outright all of his other non-Dark Shadows books. So that's how I started reading the books and getting interested in them. And I never minded that it didn't, the books didn't blend or agree with what was happening on the show, because all of us, I'm sure, have read comic books and read science fiction and watched Star Trek and Doctor Who, and so we know all about alternate realities, parallel time, multiverse. So I just figured, well, these are different interpretations of the character. Because in the Ross novels, I believe Barnabas never was in the chained coffin. He became a vampire and then just wandered and lived his undead life for centuries occasionally coming back to Collinwood in 1870 or this period or that period. So that was a big change in the books from the TV show.
I had the opportunity to visit the Dan Ross Archive at Boston University that you are in. And the most interesting part for me is that he has all of the letters from his editor where they talk about how he should incorporate plots from the show into the books. And his editor, Susan Jacobson, was getting her information from ABC, and then she would pass it on. And she would make it seemed like she would had a lot of trouble getting good info from ABC. So there was a lot of shots in the dark, like she would say, oh, well, they're getting rid of Vicky. We have to change Vicky and make it Maggie, but leave it open in case they want to bring her back. And with Barnabas, he made a big splash with that. And she sent him all of these episode descriptions and how to work Barnabas in. But my favorite letter from this collection was from 1969. She was apparently talking to Jonathan Frid at a party, and he told her, you know, Barnabas wasn't actually from England. So Susan said, okay, we have to change that now. No more Barnabas being from England.
Just the handsome Britisher
Britisher in the caped coat.
Yes, yeah. Do you remember any of the other suggestions or recommendations that they asked them to put into the novels?
Earlier on, it was put Vicky in more peril. More peril for Vicky. Quentin, she couldn't really get a handle on Quentin. She's like, okay, I think he's bad. He's a bad werewolf. Barnabas is a good vampire. Chris Jennings, we don't really know. Maybe write him out.
Chris Jennings we could do a whole episode about how Chris Jennings is depicted in the Foe of Barnabas Collins, because he's set in 1910, I think, and he's an evil werewolf. Chris Jennings is
really mean.
He's not nice. He's a completely different character. The way he turns into a werewolf is totally wears a belt. It's much more drawn from folklore
belt.
And stuff. Yeah,
and
yeah.
They don't switch to Willie until much later. And there was a letter about writing the movie tie-in book. And she said, well, okay, now you can write about Julia and Willie. And she has him switch hair to Willie in one of the later novels.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it took that long to get Willie in, but.
Because hair was in it a lot and a few other ones too, but hair, I was confused, I remember, because Hare dies in Barnabas Collins, in the Barnabas Collins novel, and then he's back again, but in the present day, and they don't really explain that. So I don't know if Hare comes back from the dead, but Hare's there sometimes. Then it's Willie, and Ross also brought in Professor Stokes in a couple of the later novels as well. So let's talk about some favorites of the Ross novels. Joe, what are some of your favorite Ross novels?
I liked Barnabas Collins and The Secret. I'm going to talk about those two kind of together because they both are very similar in the way Barnabas is portrayed. He's got much more of an edge and is quite a bit more evil, I guess you'd have to say, although he's not totally evil. I like the fact that he's really creepy and feels like a vampire.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole story in Barnabas where he's raising a child to be Josette.
That was creepy. Super creepy.
That's creepier than anything ever done on the show. But it's really not unprecedented because it mirrors the Maggie thing. I mean, it's worse, I guess, in a way, but it's still very, reminiscent of that. I liked The Curse of Collinwood. I guess, on the whole, I like the books that don't have the Scooby-Doo ending. I liked The Curse of Collinwood because it seems to me that the zombies were real. I mean, he does leave the out for people that are doubters, but it seems to me that more likely than not, the zombies were real. And that feels like it's something that could have happened on the show. If they hadn't gone with Barnabas, they could have done zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I liked the Sea Ghost 29 because it had the entire cast. And it had Julia and Stokes and Willie. It felt more like the series, even though they did have that Scooby-Doo ending.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of unfair to say Scooby-Doo ending, because that's the Gothic novel predates Scooby-Doo, but that's what it always reminded me of when I was a kid.
I'm sorry, Amy, go ahead.
There are a lot of Scooby-Doo endings. Like
for sure.
The Phantom Mariner, it's a rubber mask and whips it off and she dies.
Yeah, there are a lot of those novels tend to follow a certain formula, like there's the ingenue comes to Collinwood and then she's menaced by these strangers and then Barnabas has to help her and then Quentin shows up wearing a different disguise and he's a troublemaker. He might be helpful or he might be not be helpful, but it's kind of tends to follow certain patterns with different variations. Jeff, how about you? What are some of your favorites?
As I said, I love novel number 6, Barnabas Collins, and I too like the next one, The Secret of Barnabas Collins, and the next two after that, The Demon of Barnabas Collins and The Foe of Barnabas Collins.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the last novel, 32, Barnabas Quentin and the Vampire Beauty, which was unusual in that the heroine becomes a vampire herself. And Dr. Julia Hoffman is in the book. So I really liked that one. And then I liked Barnabas Quentin and the Mad Magician and Barnabas Quentin and the Scorpio Curse and the Crystal Coffin, which was a very distinct image in my mind's eye as I was reading. And Dan Ross himself liked Barnabas Quentin and the Frightened Bride, which takes place right after World War I. He liked that because he said that time period isn't done very often. And he said that he also liked Barnabas Quentin and Dr. Jekyll's Son, and dedicated that book, I believe, to Robert Louis Stevenson. The dedications in Dan Ross's books are always interesting. One to his friend Walter Pidgeon, a fellow Canadian, and most of people we haven't heard of, but sometimes he explains who they are to my friend so-and-so who do this and that. And Dan Ross told me that the novel number 32 was another one of his favorites also.
Mm-hmm.
And he had made plans to write a 33rd novel. He had come up with a plot, Barnabas Quentin and the Mad Ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
But the series was canceled, and so that never went beyond a one-page plot treatment, breakdown type thing. Speaking of Barnabas Quentin and the Sea Ghost, as Joe was, I believe, I met one of my best and longest time friends, Martin McGahey, who is both an actor and a minister, in seventh grade, because I happened to see him reading Barnabas Quentin and the Sea Ghost. So I walked up to him and we started talking about Dark Shadows. And similarly, years later, 20 years later, I guess, I met another close friend, Derek Martin, when I was at a comics horror sci-fi convention here in Nashville, and I saw him looking through a box and picking out Dark Shadows comic books. So I went over and talked to him about that. So the novels and comics and all of the Dark Shadows memorabilia have played a big part in my life.
Great.
Nice.
Now, Amy, how about you? What are some of your favorite Ross novels?
I'm going to echo The Curse of Collinwood. I think that's the most genuinely creepy book of the whole series. It's I love that it starts with a whole reset from the first few novels. Victoria's love interest, poor Ernest, gets killed in a plane crash in Brazil, so that opens a space for Burke Devlin to have more of a role in the novel, which is fun.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Burke decides that let's go open up this tomb and see if these coffins that we've been hearing about, this legend about, are there. And the zombies are in these coffins. And the legend is that if moonlight strikes the coffins, then they're going to awake. And Burke can't get the door of the coffin closed. And of course, the next night it's a full moon and the zombies are are up. And I thought Dan Ross did a really good job of how he built the sequence of Vicky realizing that the moon is full, and oh no, Elizabeth and Carolyn are both outside of the house, and she looks out the window and there are these two figures on the lawn. And I gotta say, Kathryn Lee Scott did just a bang up job on like building the tension in this. And there's also a local psychic who lives in a shack called Mad Martin, and he talks in this whispery voice, and it's great. And I totally believe that these are actual zombies, not the sinister hippies who happen to have the same body types as the zombies. So they could be out doing crimes, but it's the zombies. Also, the demon of Barnabas Collins, I really liked, which is a movie being filmed on Collinwood, and the actress who's the heroine in this, and I thought that she was pretty good. She has a little more agency than some of the other ones. Her romance with Barnabas feels a little more, you know, like equals rather than, you know, young ladies that he may have seduced, and there's another vampire, and she works with her co-star is a vampire, and he has his own doctor who's treating him. And the actress works out a deal with the doctor to also treat Barnabas, but in exchange, she has to, you know, give up some of her good scenes in the movie. And there's some pretty good stakes there. Like, you wonder, how is she going to get out of this situation? So it's a little bit different from the formula. I got to mention Barnabas Quentin and the Mummy's Curse, which is just fun. And, you know, that fills in that missing monster that everybody wishes would have been on the show. And he's a real mummy, too. He's not in a rubber mask. And I especially love that he pops up in the back of a car. And I think it's Maggie, and just pops up in the car and is menacing. And that's totally fun. I really like when Carolyn is the heroine. I think he writes a good Carolyn. She's very spunky. She feels like Nancy Barrett. The Mad Magician was mentioned. Another good one is Barnabas Quentin and the Magic Potion. Mm-hmm. That's some good action-oriented Carolyn. And I also really liked Barnabas Quentin and the Vampire Beauty. I think there's some early scenes where that, you know, the heroine gets tricked into going to this weight loss clinic, and it's run by a mad scientist who's, you know, using his patients to cure vampires. And there are some crazy characters in there. It's that, you know, you really get the sense of she's locked up in this hospital, and, you know, she doesn't know what's going on. And Barnabas and Quentin wind up working together a little more than they have in some of the previous novels, which I really liked. And I also just wanted to mention Barnabas Quentin and the Mad Ghoul. I got to see the outline of that in the archive. And I'm really sad that that never got written, because it really seemed like Quentin was going to take more of an active role in this. He was going to be maybe the lead romantic figure rather than Barnabas, and maybe seemed a little bit more like the show. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been interesting, that one. I agree, having Quentin kind of take point on that one. There was also another planned thing that Ross wanted to do. I think it was Craig Hamrick uncovered it, was that he was going to, before Vicky left the books, I think he was going to have Barnabas turn out to be Vicky's father, which is insane. Have you guys heard about this? Craig, yeah.
Craig wrote a short novella based on that.
Yeah, that Barnabas was going to turn out, it was going to turn out that Barnabas was the father of Victoria Winters, which I don't know if fans would have yeah. really gotten into that. But
it was nice. Craig did a good job writing this, and it's in very much in the Dan Ross kind of a voice. And Ernest comes back from the dead, mm-hmm. and they get married, and it's, and Barnabas walks Vicky down the aisle.
Oh, nice. And some of them, Barnabas is not a vampire, much like in the Gold Key comics. Some of them, Barnabas is cured of vampirism, but then he reverts to being.
And it's not as weird too in the novel universe, because there's never actually a romance between Vicky and Barnabas mm-hmm. in the novels. It's Vicky is Ernest and these other kind of disposable young men. So he's kind of more like a friend in this.
Yeah.
So
I see. I really like, I mean, you've all called out some of my favorites. Barnabas Quentin and the Mummy's Curse is definitely one that I really like. It's just really fun. It has a mummy in it, which they never did in the show, and I thought it was really cool. I like Barnabas Quentin and the Vampire Beauty as well. It's just an interesting concept, the way, you know, that with the opposites, and she becomes a vampire herself, mm-hmm. and it had Julian and it had Professor Stokes in it too. I liked the early ones too, the pre-Barnabas ones, because they felt a little more like the story Bible, like the Art Wallace story Bible. I think Ross went to greater pains to describe like Collinwood and the grounds and Collinsport. So they were atmospheric. I really did enjoy those a lot. The Barnabas Collins, the first Barnabas Collins novel was good too. I liked that one. Barnabas, super creepy in that. When I was a teenager, when I first started reading the Ross novels, I had a difficult time at first because I adore the show. So it was the characterizations were quite different from especially for Barnabas. I found the depiction of Barnabas as a vampire later on, he was a little more, Ross really downplayed the vampirism, you know, in the terms of, oh, they're like just two insect bites. It's no big deal.
They're not harmed.
No, it's okay. He's a nice guy. He's a handsome Britisher. So sometimes I was a little like, I think the impact of Barnabas struggling with his vampirism was, I mean, he bring it up, you know, the curse and all of this. And Angelique too. Angelique was in a few of these too. It's different. You got to kind of, I think you have to approach these, for those who have not read the Ross novels, you have to, like Jeff said, you have to look at them as sort of an alternate universe, a parallel universe, which the show had parallel time. So this is kind of exists in its own world where things are not exactly the same there, where there can be an alien invasion at Collinwood, as we saw
in Swamp.
Worlds. Yeah.
What's that?
It's kind of like Worlds too, because every time they visit a past time period, there's a different family.
It's true, yes.
And yeah. Quentin is never consistent. I mean, in Nightmare Assassin, he's kind of sort of close to what he was in the series when Carolyn goes back in time and she meets a sarcastic Quentin who's kind of ambivalent. But then you go to episode number 20, Witch's Curse. The whole thing's in Venice, and he's this satanic cult leader.
Yeah.
And he doesn't resemble any Quentin that I remember from anything in, not only in on the series, but even in Ross's depiction of Quentin in any of the books.
Yeah, very different. And the whole disguise thing, I think, I always can kind of figure out when you're reading it, like, oh, that's Quentin. That's the one who's going to be Quentin.
The glasses and the wig. It must be Quentin.
It must be Quentin, or he's wearing a mask because he's been disfigured in some, you know, the Frightened Bride, I think, had a character who was wearing a mask. Spoilers, but I always put a spoiler tag at the top of these shows. So we're talking about these novels. So spoilers there. But yeah, Quentin always with the disguises too. For fans who may want to experience these for the first time, what do you recommend, Joe, as sort of a first jumping off point? Do you recommend starting at the very beginning, or a specific novel that you would recommend people check out?
Well, if you don't like the pre-Barnabas era, you can just skip all the first five. If you do like it, The first five are really kind of close to what pre-Barnabas was, at least in terms of Ross. But I would recommend that, like, if you like House of Dark Shadows, then start with Barnabas and Secret. But if you don't like Barnabas as an evil character, you're not going to like those. So I would then say, well, my favorites are like Foe, Barnabas Collins. Again, I'm focusing on the ones that have supernatural characters, you know, like, because that one has Chris Jennings and Angelique. Nightmare Assassin has Carolyn go back in time, and I won't give the spoiler, but there's werewolves in that, real werewolves. And then if you like the blending of science fiction, you could try Body Snatchers.
That one's bananas. That is such a bananas idea for that one.
Yes, it is. So, it would depend on I would want to know what the person liked about the show or what they thought of Barnabas, mm-hmm. and then go from there.
Okay.
And see.
Yeah. Okay. Jeff, how about you? What do you recommend as a jumping off point for people?
Well, if people like House of Dark Shadows, they would enjoy the novelization mm-hmm. of that movie because Ross wrote it from a very early draft of the script. And so there are some scenes in the book that did not make it into the movie that were either cut or were never filmed. I would suggest number six, Barnabas Collins, because when Barnabas started on the show, he was not a sympathetic character. He was doing horrible things to the women and everyone in Collinsport. So he was more of, as in Dan Curtis's word, a marauder. And that was carried out to full fruition, of course, in House of Dark Shadows, which was Dan Curtis's original idea of what Barnabas ought to be. But Jonathan Frid, of course, played it in such a sympathetic, romanticized way that Barnabas became the reluctant vampire and the star of the show. So, I would recommend number 6, 7, 8, and 9. I think that those are really good. The Secret of Barnabas Collins, The Demon of Barnabas Collins, The Foe of Barnabas Collins. Barnabas Quinton and the Body Snatchers is just an aberration, an anomaly at best, and an aberration at worst. It's almost like the Dark Shadows comic book taken a few steps farther come to life.
Yeah.
But one unusual aspect of the book, other than the science fiction element, is that Ross wrote that book in the omniscient point of view.
Yes,
he kept switching scenes, and the heroine was not in every single scene, or Barnabas even, or Roger. Almost all of Ross's books, Dark Shadows and everything, are in a third person point of view, in which we are following the heroine and we know what she knows, and we can hear her thoughts. So it's perhaps a combination of third person and omniscient, but we don't know what anybody else is thinking. And we, I guess, never have a scene in which the heroine is not there, or almost never. So Body Snatchers is unusual in that, it's an omniscient point of view. And I think I asked Dan Ross, well, why did you do it that way? And he simply said, well, I thought that the novel called for that type of point of view, and I needed to do it that way. Mm-hmm. As we have said, number six, Barnabas Collins, is extremely moving, emotional, tragic, well-written. Dan Ross never claimed to be a great writer like F. Scott Fitzgerald or fill in the blank. He said, there are flashes of great writing in my books, but I am an entertainer. I am a teller of tales. To him, the plot and the characters were the focus. He, as a writer, was not the star. His style was not the star. He turned it completely over to the characters and the story. And Dr. Howard Gottlieb, who was the curator of the special collections at Boston University for years, called Dan Ross a storyteller, perhaps the greatest storyteller of the 20th century. And that was true. He wrote great, great stories. And true, even though there were many similarities and formulaic aspects of the books, they were always different and surprising and full of local color and interesting characters. And of the 120 books of his that I read, I correctly guessed the culprit or the phantom or the killer only two times.
Wow.
Even after reading 120 of his books, many of which had a phantom or culprit or killer at the end, he still was able to surprise me. I almost never could guess who it was. And so that was a wonderful surprise. I always loved getting to chapter 12 or chapter 13 because you knew that was going to be the excitement and the reveal and, you know, the big payoff for the book. And it always was.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, Barnabas Quentin and Dr. Jekyll's Son, which was also that he dedicated it to Robert Louis Stevenson. If you like The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Ross incorporated a lot of elements from the novella, characters. He references Utterson, and you know, it's a really he references events from the original novella, so it's almost like a sequel to that in a way. So that was really, I thought that was a really fun one too. Amy, what about you? What would you recommend as a sort of a jumping off point for people if they want to jump into these novels?
I agree. The early Barnabas ones are a good place to start. I do think number 5, The Curse of Collinwood, is a good place to start. I found that some of the earlier Vicky novels a little bit slow, but they're fun with some of the world building, additional world building that you get in this, of, you know, like different shops and Collinsport and stuff. But that's kind of, I'd recommend those more for the super fan. I think The Curse of Collinwood has a lot of action in it, and you know, and the first Barnabas is you know, that pulls you right in. Some of the ones in the middle, I think, is when he starts to get a little bit more repetitive, like when they, as the show got more popular, but like by 1969, he was really cranking them out. Like, yeah, spent like 2 weeks on this, which is amazing. But you know, some of these, the heroines start to feel a little interchangeable. But I think also I would say the last one, I mean, it seems strange to recommend starting with the last one, but he really has some, you know, some good ideas and some strong writing in there. So I think if you read that and you like that, then you might want to try some of the other ones.
Yeah. It's remarkable how many of these books he churned out. He was described as the, from the, in the New York Times book review, called him one of the most formidable writing factories in this or any other hemisphere. And that was in 1969. There's an interview with Dan Ross where he talks about his day and how he would, you know, get up in the morning and he would, you know, have his breakfast, and then he'd go down to his writing area in his basement and work on the couch with his typewriter on his lap, and then he would take a little break later on, go for a walk with his wife and his dog, and then he would go right back down to writing again until 11 p.m. I think he could continue on. It's just remarkable. It's just unbelievable, churning out these stories one after the other. Joe, earlier we talked a little bit about, you know, international releases for the Ross novels. For example, I know in England, you know, that was Dark Shadows in England, because it didn't air in England until they ran it on the Sci-Fi Channel. But the books were available in the UK. And I always wondered, is there like a contingent of fans in England that their fandom is centered around the novels, but they were also translated into other languages and different places. So can you talk a little bit about that, Joe?
Yeah. A friend of mine had gone to Germany and, well, she was serving in the military there, and brought me back a copy of one of the books, and I just became fascinated by that. And I did a lot of research into the German reprints, and they initially started with two. They started with Victoria. They were printed in two magazines. There was a magazine called Gaslicht. I don't know how to say it in German, but it's Gaslight in English, and they were romance novels. So Victoria Winter's novels, the first four, not Curse of Collinwood, the first four were reprinted at various times with various covers. They never got a handle for Victoria. I mean, every time she appeared in a novel, she was depicted with a different cover image. And in fact, there was one, I think it was Strangers at Collins House, that was reprinted, and they did a different cover with a different, totally different image of Victoria. And then they also did the Barnabas Collins and the Mysterious Ghost. And that was in a magazine called Vampire Horror Roman. And it kind of shows Barnabas as a very romantic, dashing figure who's fitting into that world of dancing. And that was it for a while. And then in, I think it was 1980, they started doing the nine more novels. But they used a very different, ghastly look for Barnabas Collins. He looked almost like Dracula on steroids. And they did nine of those.
And this was in Germany, right?
This was in Germany, yes, all in Germany. And I'm currently trying to find out about the Norwegian book or books, because I have one cover image that was sent to me. I haven't found it online at all, anywhere else. But they did do, I believe it's Dark Shadows. I can't really tell for sure. Whether that's the only one they did over there, I'm not positive, but I know that at least one book was in Norway, and then in Japan.
Yeah, for the video version of this episode, if you want to see some of these covers, Joe is showing one off, and I'll put some up on the screen that he emailed to me as well.
This is the novelization of House of Dark Shadows, and it came out as a tie into the 2012 Johnny Depp movie. I guess they wanted to put out a novelization of the movie.
Is that Japanese?
Yes.
Oh, it's a Japanese. Okay, yeah. Wow.
I guess they wanted a novelization of the movie, but they couldn't. They didn't have one, and I guess they didn't want to invest in doing their own. So I guess they figured, you know, the next best thing would be the novelization of House of Dark Shadows. It's self-contained, and you know, it's a nice story to just represent this, you know, the closest thing to what they were showing in the Depp movie, although it's really not that close to that either. And then here's the back image with it shows House of Dark Shadows. So I don't know if that was the only countries that they were translated in, but that, you know, we know that it was that Norway, Germany, and Japan all had at least one book.
Yeah, translated. About, does anybody else have any thoughts on international releases for the books?
I looked back through my research and notes, and I found that 67 million copies of all of Dan Ross's novels were published in 22 countries.
Wow.
I know his books were popular in Italy, and for a while, some filmmakers in Italy wanted to make a movie of his cruise ship novel, The Dancing Years. I don't think anything came of it. So I don't know what the 22 countries are, but I imagine, you know, more countries in Europe, Asia, and elsewhere. Canada, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ross lived in Canada, Dan and Marilyn Ross. So they could. I know Dark Shadows aired in certain parts of Canada, especially if you were near the border, you could get the signal. I've had some guests on the podcast who are Canadian and watch the show, but I think as you got further into Canada, Ross was not able to watch Dark Shadows, right?
Right. Yes, he really didn't know much about the show other than the press kit and materials that Dan Curtis Productions sent to him, and as Amy, you said, the editor coached him of what to do and what not to do. So, but he, I believe he liked it that way because that gave him free rein to write his own plots and to interpret the characters in his own way and not have to fill in with a prescripted format of what the characters or the story should be.
So an interesting thing too is when we're talking about the covers, the original first four had painted covers initially, and then when Barnabas became a big hit, they released the original four with photos of Jonathan Frid and Alexandra Moltke. And Paperback Library, throughout the run of the Dark Shadows novel series, they have used really interesting pictures, some very unique pictures on those covers. And Nick Caputo, who was a guest on the podcast a little while back, and he's going to be on again with Jeff to talk Gold Key. Nick shared with Alan Gallant and myself some alternate versions of those photos from those photo shoots. And he gave us permission, both of us, to show those. And Alan, in episode 5 of Collinsport After Dark, Alan did a deep dive into the photos on the Ross novel covers and specified where and when the pictures were taken, and including these 10 photos that Nick provided. Nick worked with someone who used to work at Paperback Library, and he asked her if she had any pictures from Dark Shadows, and she did, and she gave him these photos. So and Nick was kind enough to give me permission to show them as well. So I will, in the video version of this, if you want to check that out, I'll be putting those up on the screen. And for a deep dive into these photos, please go check out Alan Gallant's Collinsport After Dark, which is a great YouTube podcast, and he really does a deep dive into those. So major thanks to Nick for allowing me to show these photos here as well, from his personal collection. Now, the Ross novels are readily available. You can get the original ones. You can find them, on Amazon. You can find them in used bookstores sometimes. A lot of times you can find them on eBay. Some of them are expensive, especially Vampire Beauty, the last one, number 32. That one is expensive if you want to get that one. But fortunately, you have other options as well. Hermes Press has released all of the Ross novels in larger format. Here we go, side by side. If you were looking at the video version, the original ones are smaller. The Hermes Press ones are a bit larger. I like these because they're larger print. As I get older, my eyesight isn't as good as it used to be. So, and plus these can be kind of fragile, the original ones. So you can get them all through Hermes Press. And as Amy mentioned, Catherine Lee Scott read all of them, so you can get them in audiobook form too, which is great because I have a long commute. So I sometimes will listen to those in my car, and that'll last you a little while too, driving back and forth. And Catherine is great. She does all the voices, like you said, Amy. You mentioned on Nancy Barrett when Carolyn Magic Potion, she kind of channels Nancy Barrett a little bit. I feel like when she's doing that, doesn't she?
Yeah, and whenever the words Dark Shadows are said, she always kind of says it like she has a little smile.
Yes, yeah. I had her on the podcast a couple months back, and she talked about recording those. She recorded them during COVID. So she'd go down to the studio by herself and just spend the day there recording the Ross novels, and she said it was great. She really enjoyed doing it. And she said, I wish they had done some of those stories in the show too. It was kind of fun hearing her thoughts on recording those. So those are also readily available. You can get those on Amazon. You can get them as a download or CD. I still have a CD player in my car, so I do like getting the CD and popping it in. Various options there. So I guess I want to just go around with any closing thoughts on these Ross novels, if any of you have anything else you want to add that I did not touch on that you would like to share or discuss. And we'll start with Joe.
Well, one thing that I noticed a while back was how long it took for the books to catch up with the show. Right now I'm watching the Adam storyline, and we're in May of 1968, which follows the dates exactly. So what the episode that aired today, aired in May 23rd, 1968, would be also Thursday. They're just putting out Curse of Collinwood in 68. And Barnabas doesn't come in until around episode 620 something, or in that area, in November. So Quentin is being introduced, Vicky's off the show, and they're finally bringing Barnabas on. And another thing that just one more thing I want to mention is Catherine Lee Scott recorded these books, so she's got like 191 hours of DS right here, when you compare, and then you've got all her episodes of the show, everything she's done with Big Finish, in terms of number of hours, she has the record for the most time on audio video for Dark Shadows. I mean, even Jonathan Frid, he did 593 episodes, but you know, he was only a member of the cast. She's got 191 hours of uninterrupted talking. So that kind of makes her the queen of Dark Shadows in terms of number, you know, the amount of productivity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Amy, any additional thoughts?
Two more nuggets from the archive. For the book, the Witch's Curse. I wondered what was the Witch's Curse, like maybe Angelique, but actually it was apparently originally the Gorgon's Curse.
Oh,
but
okay.
The publisher didn't like the way the word Gorgon looked on the cover, so they just changed it to witches.
I see. Okay, interesting.
And also I just wanted to mention that apparently at one point there was going to be a novelization of the second movie. He and his editor talk about that, but then
Joe wrote a novelization of Night of Dark Shadows to sort of fill in that gap. But I didn't know that that was actually
discussed. Some back and forth about that, but then it just got dropped.
Yeah. Joe, is that available anywhere, your novelization of Night of Dark Shadows?
It's available as a free download. I've never, well, except at Seaview, I did make a few copies to give away to people, but I've never sold, it's never been for sale.
Okay.
It is available as a free download. I can send you the information later on where you
can
find it.
Okay, I can put it in the show notes if you like, if you'd like to make that available to people. And you can also read the script in the movie book that Catherine Lee Scott put out through Pomegranate Press for both films, which have all the scenes that were cut out of the both films. Jeff, any additional thoughts that you'd like to share on the Ross novels?
Well, I'd like to ask Amy, when did you go to Boston University? Was Dr. Howard Gottlieb still the curator, or had he retired or died by then?
I just went last month.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, Howard Gottlieb for many years was in charge of all of those special collections at Boston University, the papers of Fred Astaire, Betty Davis, Roddy McDowell, Irwin Shaw, Dan Rather, and of course, Dan Ross, and was good friends with Marilyn and Dan Ross. And Dan Ross admitted that he used Howard Gottlieb as a character in several of his books, usually as a murderer. Ross said that he often would base some of the characters in his books on his society friends and people he knew. I'm so thrilled that you were able to go and look at all of that. That's wonderful.
The inventory of this collection is 58 pages long.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Okay.
And you can
see. Do you have to get special permission? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You just have to notify them a couple weeks ahead of time and make an appointment to go in and pick out which boxes you want, and they'll pull it for you, and you could take pictures with your phone. Oh. And it was kind of fun to see the manuscripts, some of his original manuscripts, and the edits that different people did on them, and it was great.
And of course, Marilyn was his first proofreader and editor. And she was especially valuable in his nurse romance novels because she had been a nurse. Mm-hmm. Do you all know the story about how they met?
No.
Well, Dan Ross's first wife was Charlotte, who was an actress and who performed with him all over the Canadian provinces in the 30s and 40s. And that's how they met and fell in love. But then in the late 1950s, Charlotte became stricken with cancer. And so Dan took her to a hospital in Boston where her nurse was a young New Hampshire woman named Marilyn Ann Clark. And after Charlotte passed away, Dan, you know, had no more connection with the hospital or anything. But Marilyn wrote him a note of sympathy. You know, she had been Charlotte's personal nurse and wrote him a sympathy card. And so that touched Dan Ross. And whenever he was in Boston, he took Marilyn out to dinner, first as friends, but then in a scenario just as exquisite as his romance novels themselves, the two of them fell in love. Mm-hmm. And she was 23 years younger than he. But they were very much in love and were married in 1960. And then he spent the 1950s writing 600 short stories for the New York Daily News, Mike Shane Mystery Magazine, and other magazines. But around 1960, his agent said, stop writing short stories. The short story market is drying up, so start writing novels. So Dan Ross didn't write his first novel until he was about 49 years old, 1962, Summer Season, which was a romantic story about people in an acting troupe, something he knew a lot about. And so Marilyn, as I said, proofread the pages as he took them out of his typewriter and gave him tips about the nurse novels and how nurses, what their duties are and how they would react. But he also, as he said in his interview when he was on the David Letterman show in 1987, he said that Marilyn keeps him straight in terms of what day of the week it is. He doesn't want to skip a day, or occasionally he might call a character by the wrong name, but yeah, she catches that. And so he told me that she, you know, was a perfectionist, and that's hard to find in publishing. And so she had it almost perfect before he even turned it into the editors. And that's why he was able to write so quickly. You know, he, as you said, Amy, in the late 60s and early 70s, he was writing a Dark Shadows book in 2 weeks and then another one of his Gothic novels in 2 weeks. Wow. So that was his most prolific period. You know, he wrote his 100th book in 1968 and his 200th in 1971.
Oh, wow.
And finally, his 300th came 11 years after that, because in the 80s, that's when he, when Gothic novels sort of went out of style. And actually, they split into two genres, straight horror or straight romance. Mm-hmm. And so that's when he started writing his historical novels like China Shadow, Moscow Mists, Passion, Cargo, Denver's Lady, The Raven and the Phantom. And so that took a lot more time, because he said, you know, if you're writing about a place and you haven't been there, you have to research it. Or if you're writing about World War One or the 1800s or whatever, you have to make sure all of your facts are right, because I want to do it right. I don't want to give, you know, false impressions and as he said, piffle to his readers. I want them to get a clear picture of what it might have been like back then and what these characters were like. So those long historical novels took much longer research time than just, you know, writing a Dark Shadows novel in 2 weeks. So he ended up with 358 novels and 600 short stories, a couple of which I used with my students at Tennessee State University for many years. So he led a remarkable life. And I'm so glad that we have been able to talk about Marilyn and Dan Ross today with each other and with the listeners and the viewers.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you all for joining me to talk about that. But Jeff, before we go, you reminded me of a couple of things. You mentioned that Dan Ross had been an actor, which he did Summer Stock. He worked as an actor for some time before he started writing in middle age. I became a writer. He made Barnabas an actor in mm-hmm. several of the novels. Barnabas was a theater actor in several of those novels, which was really interesting. I'm sure drawing from his own experience and putting that into the novels, which was really fun. The other thing too, you mentioned him being on David Letterman, which I was not aware of. Did he mention the Dark Shadows novels at all when he was on Letterman?
Oh yes. I believe it was April 1st, 1987. Mm-hmm. And David Letterman paid to have a huge mountain of his novels brought in from Canada and stacked them up behind Dan Ross on the set, so that you couldn't even see the set. All you could see was this mountain of of novels, all of his novels, but we fans could immediately detect, oh, I see the Dark Shadows book there, and I see a Dark Shadows book there. And Dan was disappointed that Letterman didn't do more with the stack, but, you know, the interview was only 5 or 10 minutes long, and so he couldn't take every single book out and examine it, but he did pull a few out and show the covers. So, yeah, it's a very interesting interview. I believe April 1st, 1987, on the Late Night with David Letterman show. I think Dolly Parton is on that episode, too.
I wonder if that's on YouTube. I'll have to look that up. Remarkably, just days after we recorded this episode, I got a message from Jeff, who let me know that Norman Fisher posted this very interview on David Letterman in the Dark Shadows in the Sun fan club group on Facebook. So I'll put a link to the Dark Shadows in the Sun fan club group on Facebook. Thank you so much, Norman, for posting that video of the Dan Ross interview on David Letterman. It was really cool to see that. So make sure to go check out the Dark Shadows in the Sun fan club group on Facebook and watch the video.
So yeah, but it was a very good interview. And that's also when Dan mentioned my wife keeps me straight on the details, you know, and keeps the days straight. And then I think as a joke, I don't think this ever happened, but trying to be funny, he said, and she keeps the names straight because sometimes I start with Lulu and end with Mary. Now, I don't think that ever really happened, but I think he was trying to have some comic repartee there.
Right. Yeah. And for collectors, Dark Shadows collectors, I do believe this is the first licensed Dark Shadows item, the first Dark Shadows novel published in December 1966, I believe.
Yeah, so, I imagine so, yes.
I believe it was the first Dark Shadows collectible, so you can start your Dark Shadows collection with Dark Shadows novel. I want to say thank you to all of you for joining me today to discuss this topic. It's been a long time coming. I've been doing this podcast a little over 3 years now, and it's about time. I want to start branching out and talking about the Ross novels, Gold Key Comics, Big Finish Audios, some of the other things, 91 series. I got that one scheduled as well. That's coming up. So lots of fun things to come. Thank you all for joining me. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I hope to see you all again sooner rather than later.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. It was fun.
And for as long as they lived, the dark shadows never truly vanished, for there will always be Terror at Collinwood. Terror at Collinwood is a Penny Dreadful production.